You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, esteemed guests, to Extra Time, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com, the official podcast of Major League Soccer, and on YouTube. I am David Goss, and I'm joined today by two special people. One, Charlie Davies, and the other one, a burrito-less, Kalen Carr, who is struggling through hashtag MLS is back. After months of being off, low on fitness, Kalen's already done MLS today, and right now he's sitting waiting for a burrito.
Yeah, everyone's complaining about the early kickoffs. I'm like, that's fine. I know you guys are going through it, but like, what about my burrito?
Well, you're in Atlanta, aren't you?
I am, yeah, yeah.
So maybe that's part of the problem, right?
The whole city
it's been
should
a tough
shut
day.
Down.
Tough day for, us Atlantans. Yeah, yeah, we're struggling. But I'm going to fight through it. Early kickoff, humidity, heat, humidity, no burritos. We will push on. I will continue.
Now, after every 9 a.m. game, you can go straight on to MLSsoccer.com, Twitter, or Facebook, and watch MLS Today presented by AT&T with Kalen Carr and Susanna Collins.
You guys are on it, too.
You can watch it on other days, too, when there's not 9 a.m. games. And sometimes myself and Charlie are on, but that's only by accident sometimes. It's me and Kalen and Susanna when we get the good stuff. And as everyone has mentioned this morning, it was a train wreck for Atlanta United and a great day for FC Cincinnati. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. We've got previews of the weekend coming up. We've got reviews of what we've seen so far. It has been a peak MLS is back week for sure. We have hit the ground running again. We've got 3-3 games. We've got 4-3 games. We've got potential smoke bombs. We've got red cards. We've got people throwing balls at people's face. We got it all, guys. And we're feeling pretty good. The one thing we do not have as of July 14th testing is anyone testing positive for COVID-19 inside the bubble.
Yes,
the only positive test was one player on one of the two teams, Nashville and Dallas, who have been withdrawn from the tournament. And we know those players had it already and are still getting over it. So some have not traveled home. But for everyone else, bill of clean health. And we hope that everyone keeps everything up.
Yes.
For everyone else around the country or around the world, continue to wear a mask because this is far from over. It's actually getting worse in many places. And doing the right thing helps it get better. And we look forward to that. But talking soccer, the reason Kalen is so spent is because he was probably 100 miles per hour last night coming out of the San Jose Earthquakes' glorious comeback over the mighty Vancouver Whitecaps. Down 2-0, down 3-1. Who else off the bench? Wando with a shoulder goal. And then Shea Salinas, who will join us in just a moment from Orlando with the winner. And they call him Shea Messi for a reason, Kalen. He did his thing.
Yeah, he did. He held down the R2 button as we have seen Shea Salinas do in the past. He's either provider, whatever it is. This guy has had an incredible career, and not only he's one of those guys that's been able to find the like big moment in the big match, and seems to always be. I mean, I just remember even early on when, you know, this is a while ago when I was playing against him, he was just a nightmare to try and match up with his athleticism, but then also being able to pick and find the right spots at the right time. So credit to him, credit to San Jose. I have to say they put themselves in a little bit of a tough spot, all things considered.
You don't think really the game plan was to start out 2-0?
I mean, I don't know. Almeida said in the press conference, if you plan and you practice, then you will have your reward. I don't know what they're practicing or what kind of plan that was, but it was surely entertaining for everybody else watching.
It was Ali Adnan starting it, looking like a DP left back, right? That's just how they drew it up, Charlie.
It is. And we have to also give credit and praise to Nicola for being able to just slide in the burrito bag in behind.
Did you see that?
Wait, did that just happen?
It just appeared. If you're watching on YouTube.
I mean, it was just dropped in silently. Mm-hmm. You could just see the bag going in there, and you could just see just the arm let it go and then disappear.
It has to be something from the training ground.
Attention to detail, Charlie. I respect that.
This is execution to a T. This is perfection. Well done.
And
go ahead. Step away.
It's a, it's a window. Can I get it?
Yeah, I think you should.
All right.
You're starving.
I've been thinking about it for a while. Hold on.
But San Jose, you come out like that. Going down 2-0. Everyone had to be shocked. It might have been for me, although there have been some shocking moments throughout this tournament.
Yeah.
I
think they may have thrown in some chips and queso.
I was not San Jose to go down 2-0 to Vancouver because Vancouver is, you know, bottom three teams in the league right now.
Boom. Just said it. Charlie's just going to say
bottom three. And so for San Jose, who looked the part against Seattle, dominating possession, creating chances. Also, I think a surprising performance considering everyone thought Seattle was just going to come in and steamroll that whole group. So you're expecting San Jose to take it up a notch and show, okay, we are the best team in this group. We showed it against with our match against Seattle. To go down 2-0, you're like, whoa, what is happening?
Yeah.
But then they stuck with it. They realized, okay, we need to make some changes, but we're going to go into this game and get something out of it. And they were able to get three at the last minute thanks to Shea Salinas.
Some questionable decisions maybe on both sides. You have Almeida, who started the exact same team that played against Seattle 4 or 5 days ago and started slowly, clearly. But then on the flip side, Vancouver, San Jose went with the full line change, 4 subs at one time. And Vancouver, they're missing basically 4 starters mm-hmm. in this competition that got left back in Cavallini, Andy Rose, Ricketts, and Montero. So maybe they didn't feel like they had the moves to make. They had a lot of homegrowns, young guys, inexperienced players on the bench. They didn't really make moves as early, and they seem to have lost their legs and died on that one.
Can we talk to Ashe? I know he wasn't on the pitch at the time, but what happened on that breakaway? It's the 20th minute.
You got to go for a goal, Kalen. All numbers forward.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't throw Vega up there as well and just really throw it all in there. Why is there nobody who's able to recognize, like, hey, there's nobody back here, and then Jackson Ewell's got the ball. He's the last man with the ball at his feet. That should never happen in a match.
No.
So while
as a striker, you got to be looking at the match being like, why didn't that happen when I was playing? Why wasn't teams throwing 11 players into the attacking 40 yards and in and allow me to be free like
but
that?
But it's not like nobody on this. It's not like the crowd was too loud that nobody could, communicate and say, like, hey, like, nobody noticed on the sideline.
Yeah, that's the other part. The coaching staff is already back there.
The goalkeeper? The goalkeeper always has a full view of the field.
True.
That's panic mode there. If you're Vegas, you're screaming as loud as you can.
And then can we just pour one out for Judson, who made the run to recover?
What a run.
Like 100 yards in 10 seconds, full dash, and puts it in his own goal.
Yeah.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal.
You know what the moral of the story is?
Don't try.
Don't run back. Yeah. Well, if the center backs don't do it, you don't have to do it either.
Last one before we get out. Two more. One, Mark Dos Santos was oddly positive coming out of this one. They scored 3 goals. They're missing Cavallini.
Yeah, why
Ricketts
not?
And Montero. Really, why not? I mean, you were up and you didn't get the points.
I'm saying why not sarcastically.
Got it.
Okay. Look at Vancouver. Okay. You don't have Cavallini, who really changes the way they play, changes the outlook for Vancouver when he's not a part. It's almost what he means to Vancouver is almost what Joseph Martinez means to Atlanta. It changes the way you play. It gives your team hope. He can bail you out of certain situations with his goal scoring, creating space for other people. You don't have that. It's why San Jose was pushed up so high, because they don't have a threat. So when you don't have a threat, you're like, we can afford to take these risks because who's going to hurt us?
And Vancouver was not just missing him. It was Montero, Toussaint Ricketts. They had Andy Rose. So for a team that still is largely, even with all their players, going to have to prove themselves and fight their way up the table, I would guess, mm-hmm. and wasn't picked at all coming into this, that to go in undermanned and to get off to a good start like that. But that's partly why I think it was so disappointing that they weren't able to get even a point out of this one. Even if they would have left with a draw, I think that you can say, all right, well, the inexperience showed late, the that, you know, both center backs, I think the defending on the Shea Salinas goal, they just continued to retreat and retreat and retreat into their own box. And credit to Shea for putting him on their heels. And he's a guy, when he has the ball at his feet, you're going to backpedal naturally. Yeah. But at some point, you have to confront him outside the box, take a foul, whatever it is. And in that moment, I thought some of their, as well as a couple others, I thought their inexperience showed.
Coming off that epic game, let's talk to someone who was there, Shea Salinas, the goal-scoring champion, the goal-scoring winner. Shea, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm a little sleepy. Didn't get a lot of sleep last night, but I got a nap coming up after this, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, I got to ask, after a win like that, what does the after party look like in the bubble?
In the bubble, we played darts till like 5 in the morning.
That'll do it.
There's non-alcoholic Heinekens in our refrigerator, so no one touched those. But we just played a lot of darts. One of our teammates ordered a dartboard, so that's what we did.
Shea, when you're sitting on the bench and you're watching Vancouver go up 2-0, what was going through your mind?
Oh, man, our team, the past two times we've played Vancouver, they've scored first, and we've beat them both times.
Okay.
3-1 both times. So when they score the first goal, everyone's like, okay, here we go again. No big deal. When they score the second one, that one was just crazy. Just the crazy breakaway off of our corner kick scenario. And so that was disheartening. And then we get one right before half. So we're thinking, oh, we're back in this. We're going to score no problem. I think 3-1 was the one that kind of threw us all off guard. But this team, I mean, we've built ourselves off being a team that perseveres through adversity. Even coming to this whole experience, we're like, look, this isn't going to stop us from playing our style, our system. So when we tied it 3-3, that was expected. And when we won it, that was just cherry on top.
I don't want to focus on this, but you mentioned it. So we should ask questions. 2-0, about the 20th minute. You guys put about 10 guys in the box for a corner kick. There was a full field counter. Is that something that was discussed pre-game?
I mean, it's not exactly how we drew it up. I think we're a team that wants to take risks, that wants to play soccer and take risks. We have that freedom to play, and it's fun. It's a fun style to watch, I imagine. It's a fun style to play. But obviously there's risks involved. So if we would have lost 5-0, I think we would have come back in our next game and tried the same stuff. So I don't think we're going to change our mentality.
Was anyone calling? Was anyone yelling? Like, we have 10 guys in the box.
No, that's literally how we drew it up. I mean, there's supposed to be a guy running back as the whole play happens, but that I guess there was.
So the play is to give Jackson Ewell the ball as the last man and for him to play a 1-2.
No, the 1-2 wasn't the thing. It was to get Jackson the ball. Jutson's supposed to drop back behind him, and Jackson's supposed to either shoot it or pass. I don't want to give the whole thing away, but but then he passed it to Jutson, who was supposed to be our last man, and then the rest pursued.
Okay,
but then he almost got back.
Incredible. What a run!
Yeah,
it was cruel at the end.
The guy covers so much ground in a game; it's impressive.
In the heat too, like, and then for it to come off you for an own goal.
Disheartening.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, I find that interesting because you said, all right, well, we're going to play the same way. And you know, the other big mistake was Vega playing out of the back. But I know it seems like you've committed to playing out of the back overall in general. And Almeida came out and said afterwards that he was really proud of the group for basically not putting their head down, but like fighting back for to cover your teammates' mistakes. You've been around a long time. You know, you think of yourself and Wando and all the moments you guys have had in the past, but it also feels like that character has maybe come forward into this new iteration of the team. How have you seen that take shape?
Yeah, I mean, what I love most about Matias, I've played for a lot of coaches. In my 13 years, I think I've had like 15 coaches. Ridiculous. What I love about him the most is all the coaches say, let's play out of the back. What he says is, if we make a mistake, we're still going to play out of the back. If we get scored on 4 times, we're still going to play out of the back. And he says, if we mess up, it's not on you, it's on me. Like, let the people attack me for my system. You guys keep trying it. So that just gives you confidence as a player. Like, Vega makes that mistake that leads to a goal, and then we continue to give him the ball and continue to play out of the back. And so it just gives him confidence. It gives us all confidence to keep playing. And know that he's gonna take the brunt of the criticism.
Shay, like you said, you've played in this league a long time. When teams do make adjustments because they know, all right, you're playing out of the back no matter what, if they force you, they literally double team players in your defensive third, what's the game plan? Is it just, okay, now let's play deep, or let's, you know, play in behind, or is it, we're still going to try and break you down and play out of the back? Because I've been in situations where you are just kind of like, all right, this team wants to play out of the back. We know how to press them. We will cause the turnovers.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think we practice where we play 4v4 inside our 18, or 5v4, we count the goalie, inside our 18, and we work on just possessing the ball in our own 18. And so that's something we do in practice. So we're kind of prepared for a team to press like that.
Okay.
But also for a team to push up and go 1v1, that's kind of what we want. We practice 1v1s all the time. That's like all we do every Tuesday. And so if the team presses up and goes 1v1, I think we have the confidence to hit it to a Baco or a Andy Rios up top, and then being able to hold it and turn their guy and catch them on the counter, which would be great.
I can see Charlie and Kalen are going to show up for Tuesday trainings just to do 1v1 stuff.
Those are the best days. 1v1s.
Oh, yeah. They're intense.
Count me in.
What are the battles?
Speaking of 1v1, I mean, I think you went maybe 1v4 on the last play. And you know, what were you thinking? Take us through that moment. I mean, we saw the madness that happened afterwards, but what did you see on that play?
Yeah, I think I picked the ball up around midfield, and it seemed like things just kept opening up. My first thought was that the guy behind me was going to foul me. I was just trying to get into the box and maybe draw a foul. And I mean, it kind of parted, and I meant to push it to my right and hit it far post, but he got a toe on it and it somehow bounces right in front of me. Thankfully, and I was able to get a foot on it, and it went through Kripu's legs, which he was amazing the whole night. So it was a crazy run, but the whole time I'm running, I'm like, okay, be ready to absorb the contact and hopefully get a penalty kick, and then the seas parted and I got to score.
You've been a part of some pretty wild finishes. The Goonies, of course, everything that's ever happened at Stanford Stadium. Is that what it felt like last night? You mentioned that culture. Is this the second coming? Is this Goonies Part 2? I don't know the sequel name. I don't know if there was a sequel to that movie.
I think it is a mentality I think we have, that we're willing to fight until the very end. We felt it last night. Even halftime, we're down 3-1 or 2-1, and we said, hey, this game's gonna go 100 minutes. Let's be ready for it. We're fit, we're ready. And so yeah, I think we love scoring late.
Shay, can you
gonna,
talk
it's
about
gonna be ha- it's gonna happen in this tournament, right? 5 subs, defenders are gonna get tired. Yep. It's gonna happen a lot.
Can you talk about Jackson Yule and what he means to your team? Is he more like, is he the fulcrum? Does Matias want everything to be played with him? Because it seems like he drops deep. He's always getting on the ball. He finds good spots. Can you talk about his progress and what he means to your squad?
Yeah, Jackson's been incredible to watch develop over the last 3 years. Just from being like a real technical, pretty passer to now he's gritty, getting in tackles. He covers probably the second most ground on the team behind Jutson. So he's always getting on the ball. And you're right, he's pivotal for our team. We try to find him the ball as much as possible. We let him make the decisions, and then we go off of that.
It hasn't gone, as you said, exactly as planned. You were the first team down in Florida because you weren't able to train. So there was a lot of question marks of, you know, how fluid your team would be, how fit you'd be. Now you're sitting on 4 points. It's probably, I don't mean to jinx you, enough to get through to the next round already. Where do you guys feel at, like, coming out of that game yesterday, besides the competitive darts? What's the conversation in the team?
Yeah, I think we're happy with how things are. We came into the bubble with a big disadvantage. I think we're the last team to do team trainings together. Our first time to play 11v11, I think it was 4 months prior, was our last time to do it. So it was a long break of not playing real soccer, which is difficult. But our team did an amazing job staying fit. We came into the bubble really fit, so we could go straight into 11v11 scrimmages. And that's really what most of our practices are right now, is just playing 11 aside, getting used to playing again.
So Charlie and Kalen will come for all of training then.
I cannot do 11.
Yeah, on that note, I'll be just watching. Or you can find me in the ice bath.
Yeah, we do a lot of running. Lots of ice baths.
So we got this, though, on the goal. You know, goal's a huge moment, but I think what everyone remembers is now the celebration. One, what was the reaction and energy? It felt like an MLS Cup win. And two, could you breathe afterwards because of whatever was being sprayed in the air in the vicinity?
Yeah, who was that? And because that was all over social media. Who was that? And
was what was that? That's our physio, our kinesio guy. And he is hilarious. He's like the comedian in the whole locker room. And that was the cold spray. You know, you get the knock on the shin, you get the cold spray. Wow. That was the magic spray. And no, I could not breathe. I mean, as soon as I go down, I knew it was going to be crazy. And I just didn't want to get injured. So I'm like in a ball down there. And it was amazing. But I was worried because there's still a couple minutes left. And I couldn't breathe. I'm like, someone mark my guy. I think the guy I'm marking, I don't remember his name, but he's like 7 foot tall. I'm like, please don't kick it over here. Please don't kick it over here. Thankfully, they went to the other side.
Yeah, Theo Bear did not get a goal, but you handled it well. Looking forward, you got one more game in the group stage. I'm saying it, you're already into the knockouts as well. What have you learned so far being down there? Because you have been down there the longest. You're one of the few teams that have played two games. Like, what should fans know about the playing experience?
Yeah, it's eerie. The games are kind of quiet. You can only hear your teammates screaming. So that's weird. But the humidity is real. Like it's an adjustment factor. Guys are cramping. Guys are dehydrated. And I think it was a great idea for Matias to make four subs. All four of us came on fresh legs. And I think that just kind of demoralized their defense. So the subs at the end of games are big impact moments. And I like that.
Reminds me of college soccer, where you just look over and there's just like a whole bank of substitutions coming in.
It's a line change.
Awesome. Final one to close you out. Of course, Chris Wondolowski scores off a shoulder in the middle of the box that bounces between three guys. Classic Wando. He has left the door open a little now on the I'm going to retire, but the season is weird. And July 16th of 2021, are we going to talk about Wando scoring goals off his nose and his back and his ear for another year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he loves to compete. Every time we do small-sided games or 11v11, he's screaming at everyone, getting everyone motivated. He wants to win more than ever. So I think he would miss it too much if he left. So I think he's going to play, I think, for more years than just next.
ETR inside too. Jay Salinas.
I'm just trying to outlast him.
There you go. Hey, you guys are doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. You can't outlast something that doesn't exist. He's an entity, not just a person. He's a whole experience at this point. Shea Salinas, the game-winning goal against the Vancouver Whitecaps, the best goal we've seen in this competition so far, just as he always does.
We got to ask one last thing. The comparisons to Messi, we've been seeing this all over the place.
Yeah, the right-footed Messi.
Yeah, do you embrace this new title?
Messi is... There's no one like Messi, even though we do share birthdays, June 24th. He's a year younger than I am.
This is it.
Yeah, the late June birthdays, Charlie.
You know it.
But yeah, it's fun. It's funny. He's a legend. I think it's a funny joke. I don't think it's serious.
On that note, either Leo Salinas or Shea Messi, we appreciate you taking the time to come on with us. Enjoy the rest of the tournament. We've had fun watching you so far. Stay safe. Good luck in the bubble.
Recover. And,
thanks for taking the time.
All right, thanks, guys.
Congratulations to Shea Salinas and San Jose for that victory, sitting on first place in the group. And, of course, that amazing goal. That was our AT&T call to the field with Shea. But before we get away from this game, Kalen, it stood out to me, and we mentioned it, you know, before the interview, positivity from these two coaches coming out of a game that was, quite honestly, bonkers. what's your thought of the reaction and the way that it was analyzed coming out of this performance?
Understandable in the sense that, look, this is a really emotional win. You could feel it from Shea and the group and the way they celebrated. I think there will be some learnings, though, there should be at least, because I think in some ways the expectations for both of these teams, neither of them made the playoffs last year, but I think for San Jose in particular, the expectations
should probably be higher. No, right? Like, that's the only way to really improve. And we've seen other managers, like, I'm thinking like Jim Curtin, his team is winning 1-0, 2-1, and still saying, hey guys, like, we need to do better. Right. We need to come out of this group and set the standard a bit higher. And for me, when I look at that match, there were just some pretty bad mistakes that were made and lack of organization. And look, it's hard when you just kind of like turn the lights on and have to go out and play. And for both teams, it's been kind of like that, tough circumstances and conditions. Everyone's talking about it, but I still can't help but think that for both teams, you probably want something better. I'm not sure how positive I would feel if I were a player on those teams and say, like, besides just the emotion attached to getting that win and the kind of crazy way it happened, when you're thinking at a deeper level about the way it happened and why it was so difficult, you made it a lot harder on yourself than it ever needed to be. So
yeah, sloppy mistakes. It wasn't getting broken down. A lot of times it was just bad goals giving up and sometimes bad recognition of what was going on, especially on the Judson own goal. We move on from there to another kind of wild game to start out Thursday morning, 9 a.m., breakfast and soccer. We had FC Cincinnati against Atlanta. Jake Mulroney, 2 yellow cards in 26 minutes because you got to get out of there early if you're going to hit the breakfast buffet and still get some potatoes. Those things go fast. So Mulroney got himself out of there. And then Frankie Amaya with the winner. Charlie, I want to start positive. Then we can go to Atlanta, who are struggling to deliver burritos in this time because of the chaos that was caused by Atlanta United. Mm-hmm. Fox Gibson on Twitter, and we got some amazing questions on Twitter. These are going to be sprinkled all through the rundown. Every show, it's your guys, what you want to hear. So, you know, everyone out there, guys, girls, everyone, send us what you want to hear. Fox Gibson said, love to hear your thoughts on Frankie Amaya, his hustle and general drive during matches, and his first goal today for the club.
Frankie Amaya is one of those players who's surprised me with his knowledge of the game and his movement. So getting in between those lines, he has a great first touch, which is not always the case with youngsters right now. So first touch awareness, but now we're seeing an end product. I didn't know he could take a touch and set himself up with a left-footed shot and bend it around Brad Guzan from distance. That adds a lot to a player's game. And being able to finish outside the box, as well as connect, combined, play 1-2s, switch the point of attack. He's shown that he can be a complete player, as well as defend. Being so small, he's still able to defend and get physical and use his body well. Those are all encouraging signs for a young midfielder in Major League Soccer. So I'm really high on him because you can see he has a high potential. He has a high ceiling. And this is a player that is really, I think, taking the right steps towards being able to maximize his potential.
Yeah, I agree. And Cincinnati is a team that is likely still in flux. Like, there's going to be Yap Stam. Anytime you have a new manager come in, he's kind of figuring out now who he wants to keep, who he wants to move on from. Mm-hmm. And when you look at young pieces, he's one that you could potentially build around or that can be at least a part of it for years and years to come. And you're starting to see other players maybe who are revealing themselves as important pieces. We'll see Jurgen Lacadia at some point, of course, come in. Joe Zhao, I thought also was really good, especially in this first match or in the second match against Atlanta United. And you start to see, okay, maybe that's a little triangle or you start to see these small pieces connecting the dots.
Kubo,
well. Yeah. He had some nice moments as well. But more than anything, I thought the way Yap Stam set up the team, his decision to sit back and defend. And he said in the presser afterwards, like, let's just be realistic about where we're at. You lose 4-0 and some coaches might go out and be like, you know what? We're not going to sit back. We're going to go after Atlanta United too. And I don't think that would have gone well. And so even with a man up, they stuck to their guns and I think would have been happy to take a point, but ended up finding a nice little moment from Frankie Amaya to take all three.
And guys, I just want to say like Kalen just said, this is like a training experiment. These are all, you know, ways for Yap Stam to figure out how I'm going to move forward. Where's our strengths and weaknesses? This is all new to him. So he has to experiment. He has to try different things. One is maybe, okay, let's go all out attack. Today, we lost 4-0. We're just going to sit and defend. Who can defend? Who can tough it out for 90 minutes in this heat, in this climate, in this environment versus an Atlanta side that has a lot of players who can break you down 1v1 or are supposed to break you down 1v1? So I want to see how much grit some of these guys have. How determined are they to just defend? And if we get lucky, if we counter or we score off a set piece, great. But he got a performance out of Frankie Amaya and got a goal, and they were able to win 1-0. Even though they were up a man, they really just said, we're going to defend. We're going to try and see if you guys can break us down. And Atlanta United just weren't able to do it.
Yeah, and to Kalen's point of, or yours, of his intelligence and his touch and what he can do, there's a lot of moving pieces. The things he does will fit around anyone. So whether it's CM DeYoung or Madunian or someone who comes in 6 months, the things he can do can fit in with any of those players. And so you'd think he's going to be on that team sheet at least for the next year closing out. So FC Cincinnati, a great result. Let's go to the other side. Matt Sharon on Twitter says, how much of these Atlanta performances do you attribute to Joseph's absence? And how much is on Frank De Boer and the lack of quality in the squad the front office overhauled over the last two seasons? So three elements there. Joseph missing, De Boer, and then maybe the way the squad was set up over the last 2 years, which is either on Bocanegra, Eels, or De Boer. You can make your choice. Charlie, I present the floor to you.
No, thank you very much. All across the globe, we look at certain teams, certain clubs, where they depend on one player. You can see Barcelona. When they don't have Messi, they play entirely different. They're vulnerable. They don't play the same. And LA United depends on Josef Martínez. They play through him. He is the finisher. They play for him. It's Josef Martínez. When he's off the pitch, it's an entirely different team. And he, in a way, can hide the deficiencies of an Atlanta United. So he can mask those problems. You think we're playing fine, we're playing a certain way, because at the end of the day, you get Josef Martínez a chance, he finishes, and you can win 3-2. You can win 2-1. You can win 1-0. You may not play well, but with him in the lineup, you always have a chance. There's a danger. Without him on the field, there is no danger. Teams don't look at Atlanta United the same way. No offense to Adam John, but he is not Josef Martínez. He's not going to do anything that Josef Martínez can do. You have to play a certain way for him to have a chance on goal. You have to get him service into a box, and it has to be in the air, because on the ground, he is not making the same type of movements in the box as Josef Martínez. He cannot beat you 1v1 with the ball at his feet. So those are different aspects of a player's game that you have to completely change the way a team plays to feed a striker. And then Josef Pedy Martínez, as well as Ezequiel Barco, they have to figure out ways to play together and combine, because they don't have a Josef Martínez to create space for them. So they have to create space for themselves with combination play. And teams know that. So it's like, okay, let's double PT. Let's double Barco. Let's force them into bad decisions. Let's force them to try and do too much. And that's what we see Pedy Martínez doing. He's trying to do too much, because he feels like it's on him to make up for the loss or the absence of Josef Martínez. And they are struggling mightily because of it. Thank you.
He's right. Absolutely right. Because it's really about the threat in behind too, where you saw Barco and PT, and they like it underneath. They like the ball at their feet. They want, that's where they find their joy and they create. But Joseph occupies so much of the mind space of the center backs, will occupy two, at times three players. The center, the six is going to have to keep an eye on him as well. And so that creates knockdowns, second balls, opportunities in space where you can get those guys running with a little bit more space. But yeah, Pedy Martínez has grown, I thought, and had a really good start to the year. And even in the opening match, he can at times break down one or two players at a time on his own. The issue is it's only on him. That's just like what you're waiting for. And he doesn't have that Carlos Vela type magic where Bella maybe can do it all on his own in a moment. And even him, he has a system around him that fits. Mm-hmm. And without Joseph, it's starting to expose some of those things that Charlie was saying as far as those cracks in the pavement that he would totally mask or cover up, where you don't have Nagby anymore. You don't have Gressel anymore. You don't have Gonzalez Perez anymore. You don't have
Vialba.
Parkhurst or Vialba. Yeah, you're missing all these pieces. Completely different team. Still, I think when he comes back, It will look like Atlanta United in a way, because he is just that important of a player and can cause those types of problems. But until then, I think it's going to be more of this.
To your point, LAFC didn't have Vela. They scored 3 goals. They didn't win, but they still scored 3 goals. That's the system that's created with Atlanta. It's you don't have Joseph. They've yet to score in this competition.
Also, just to throw in something, if Joseph Martinez is on the field, you also have a vocal leader who will tell players, enough is enough. We're sitting back against a Cincinnati team who is content with having 11 players within 40 yards of their own goal. They're just going to sit back. Let's press. Let's get higher up the field. And I'm going to bark. Right. I'm going to yell. I'm going to scream at every single player until they do their job, until we get that goal, until we start getting chances and generating opportunities. You don't have that. So now we saw in the match, even though there's no fans and you can hear everything, Frank DeBoer and just say, hey, everybody up. I don't want to see anyone in our own half. Everyone press high. But you could see they were dropping off against a team who was very content with even being up a man, sitting back and parking the bus. They were going to park the bus for 90 minutes. And Atlanta United never took initiative to just say, we're gonna do what San Jose did and just commit everybody forward. Because who's going to break us down in Cincinnati? No one. They don't have the players to break you down and beat you with pace and get in behind. I mean, Jao can when I think he gets fit and he gets enough minutes back under his belt because he's been out for such an extended amount of time with injuries. But Cincinnati really wasn't going to hurt you. So why not take a chance and a risk, especially with the standings? They have 0 points. This was the best opportunity for them to just say, you know what? Everybody forward. Everybody. Let's
commit. The red card made it tough for sure. But I agree with you that, I mean, he sets the tone for that team and sets the personality. Can you imagine how mad he would be if walking off that pitch today? Nope. I mean, he's mad when they win and he doesn't get a goal.
Right.
And when I watch Petey and Barco play, they get frustrated, but it's more about it's like the rest of the team is trying to keep them involved or like keep their head up, as opposed to being like, hey, this all has to be better from all of us. I think his presence is missed, of course, in his play, but I think in his personality as well.
Credit to Yopstam understanding the situation, as you said, Kalen, and keeping his lines clean on his team. They defended much better than they did. They had an idea. They knew what they wanted to do, and they got a 1-0 win. So they move to 3 points in the group. New York Red Bulls in Columbus, the other side of that group, will kick off tonight, so we won't talk about that one. We'll be back on Monday with that. Let's go to more teams that had high expectations that are struggling, but let's start positive again. Orlando City, the first team to qualify for the knockout stages of the ever MLS is Back tournament. This is how the Lions do it. If you include the Nani crossbar challenge last All-Star game, they are 3-0 at the ESPN Wide World of Sports training facility. So,
go ahead. Hey, Oscar Perea. I give so much credit to Oscar Perea to come in to a struggling Orlando side that had no identity, to come in and say, we're going to play a certain style. I'm going to get the most out of young players like a Chris Mueller, who looks like entirely different, looks a little bit more comfortable in the situation. I think he has a better understanding of tactically where he should be, where, you know, how to defend, how to create turnovers in the attacking half. And then the final ball, the product, when to shoot, when to pass, when to combine. I think he's starting to put that all together. So Oscar Perea and his staff, I give you a ton of credit, a ton of kudos. And then the Orlando City players for actually executing and surprising a lot of people. I think people had them coming out of the group as a wild card because they're at home, they're used to the climate, but to actually show, hey, we're the top team in this group right now, that is something else. So entirely different. Well done, Orlando.
They've looked up for it. Like, look at it. Some of that, honestly, in this tournament just comes down to that. It's just who is motivated, who is willing to go out there on a hot night and put everything you have into it. And you can see from, I think they rode that, we talked about like in any tournament, how important that first match is and that emotional win and from the Nani winner in the 97th minute, I think really pushed them on. And then he goes, Perea makes the choice to go with the same lineup. The same 11 in the next match, which is a risk, right? But they came out and got those early goals and then were able to make the right substitutions late. He's been very hands-on. Even in the water breaks, you watch Perea and he's bringing out the tactics board and with the dots and figuring out, organizing the team. And for a new manager and new team, the hands-on approach, I think, is really working. And look, this Orlando team has been so up and down over the years. So any sort of semblance of like continuity or consistency in their play is really good block, because new managers all across the league right now are trying. It's one thing to have your system and your tactics and your ideas, but if you're not getting results and you're not seeing it work, Cincinnati, that's a good example today too. It's going to create some belief where you're going to say, all right, I'm going to follow this guy. Because what he's doing is getting me goals if you're Chris Mueller, or what he's doing is keeping a clean sheet. And so I think, yeah, I echo Charlie's statements. I think Perea has been, and Orlando, they've been the surprise of the tournament.
It's fascinating to think what the center forward position is on that team when you have so much goal scoring in Nani, and now what Chris Mueller's doing around that. Like, you don't, because that was one of the things coming into it, was they kind of had a setup in Perea kind of as a way to win in tough games and in tough environments in their home, but where would the goal scoring come from? And it's come from those two wings. And that's fine, because Nani's a world-class player and Chris Mueller can be a goal scorer. Daniel Cluley on Twitter wants to know, does Chris Mueller have a legit shot at the USMNT given how he's played, his growth, and his success so far in this tournament? That's what everyone was talking about on Tuesday night. Kalen was on Twitter watching this game with a bunch of other people. That's what Kalen was talking about. What do you guys think? Has he improved that much, or is this who he is?
Kalen, how did this come about? And because I don't want to jump to conclusions, and I don't want to say something that is taken out of context. But how did it come to be as far as the conversation of U.S. men's national team?
Have you been on Twitter before? I mean, anybody scores. Like,
did you start it, or did you see someone tweet it and then you talked about it? How did that begin?
Dude, I was on a stream with like six fans from different countries watching the match, and we talked about literally everything under the sun for like 2 hours, which was really fun. Shout out to the Cooligans and Orlando, UK, Rocks. Who else was on the stream?
Miguel Gallardo.
Miguel Gallardo, yeah. It was fun. But I think anytime we see, I mean, we're literally starved for, I don't know. Some days I feel starved for young talent, and other days I'm like, all these guys are banging in goals all across Europe, so we're going to win. Yeah, but I think when you look at the wing position, there is a case to be made, and I think there has been one for a while. He's got some intangibles that kind of jump off the page, but he hasn't maybe had the consistency or put it together, tangibles where he's got that speed and technical ability. But look at the list of wingers that have gotten call-ups. Jonathan Lewis, who I like a lot. Corey Baird, who's the kid from who's playing in Turkey.
Tyler Boyd.
Tyler Boyd, thank you very much. Christian Roldan has been used on the wing, which I'm not sure is his best position necessarily. So, I mean, we have, yes, Christian there, and I think Jordan Morris, and you have some good pieces, but I don't see why Chris Mueller couldn't be a part of that conversation.
Charlie, do you think that you just think it's too early, or you thought?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Far too early.
Okay.
You're talking about just two matches in the MLS's back tournament.
But let's talk to Kalen's point. Jonathan Lewis is not a starter in MLS, and he made two appearances out of January camp.
Yeah. January camp. If he continues this way.
Well, right now, the whole team is a January camp team, Charlie. So let's. I'm just saying.
Well, we haven't really seen the full national team yet. And when you're talking about players right now who are playing, whether it's Christian Pulisic, whether it's Weston McKennie, whether it's Tyler Adams, whether it's Gio Reyna. I mean, these are players who are playing at the highest level and starting on their clubs. And there's no doubt, like, these players are first teamers, U.S. men's national team players, and are setting kind of like, okay, this is what is expected when you play for the U.S. men's national team. You're playing on your club and you're in form. I think for the young
winner at the MLS is back.
When you're talking about the next tier of players, I think there's it's obviously a youthful U.S. men's national team, because we're in the situation we're in, where 2022, I think the majority of that team will have had no World Cup experience.
Yeah.
None. That's rare. You never hear that. Every World Cup has a number of players left over from the previous cycle that help you adjust, learn, know what to expect in a World Cup. They're there to kind of help coach you and mentally prepare you for what's going to come.
I mean, even World Cup qualifying, we might not have much experience.
Right.
Play in Honduras.
This could be, considered the golden generation for the U.S. national team, because this team will all grow together. I think that's why it's important. And like I said, it could be if they make the Olympics, they qualify for it.
Man, I really got Charlie off on a tangent over here.
You have all the players that actually come together and medal, because if you have all those players, you're talking about the players who are playing in Europe right now, we have a squad. And then that team carries on to World Cup qualifying. They get to World Cup in 2022, which I don't think there'd be very high expectations. But 2026, now you have a team with all experience. The World Cup's here, and guys are playing in Europe and or playing in MLS and winning, you know, have the winning pedigree now to warrant a shot. So, yeah, I would say
so Chris Mueller right now. Long answer short.
He's got a ways to go before we start talking about U.S. men's national team.
Okay. I think Chris Mueller is in the pool because everyone's in the pool because there is no pool right now. And rumors that Leo Ramos from Mexico, Argentine 30-year-old striker, is linked with Orlando. So we'll see what happens there. Before we get away from this game and we preview the 2026 World Cup for the next 2 hours, let's just talk about NYCFC real quick, because they've not won a game. They've scored one goal in 2020. They are last in the group, which is never really a super impressive thing, alongside an Inter Miami team that obviously sports Kalen Carr, but besides that is struggling right now for minutes and whatever else. I guess we have this point, which is we already talked about Atlanta. NYCFC has struggled. We will talk about Seattle in just a moment, has struggled as well. And then we saw LAFC and TFC sort of struggle in their games, not at the same level. Who are you most worried about?
Houston Dynamo is what you were trying to say, I think.
We'll get there. Don't worry. Charlie will have his moment. Charlie will have his moment, I swear. Which team are you most worried about? What do you see from NYCFC?
I'd be concerned if I were NYCFC. I mean, obviously, they are. It doesn't take much there. I think Jim Curtin said on heading into the tournament that NYCFC may be the best team in the East on paper. And I would agree with that. I think when you look top to bottom in that roster and you see that the talent that they have, that, yeah, everybody, we all like put them either close to the top or at it, going to the preseason rankings, which we know matter so much. But yeah, they just haven't looked the same. Now, part of it, I think, was, there's always going to be an adjustment period when you have a new manager, even Domi Torrent, who eventually turned things around and got them playing fantastic soccer, top of the East last year, had a really rough start. Mm-hmm. And this hasn't been an easy situation to come into as a new manager, where you have this beginning of the season and then months off and comes in, but everybody's dealing with that. And you have a lot of really good pieces to play with. Andre Blake makes a good save in the first match. That's, I think, a big difference, where Hebert doesn't get that goal. And then in the second match, you don't have your best player, Maxi Morales. And we went through all of the talk over Joseph Martinez and what Atlanta United, how important one player can be into a team. And Maxi Morales, to me, fits squarely in that category. So I'm not going necessarily to like all is lost here. I probably would have made a couple different changes. They changed for Aronson at the beginning of the halftime, and I think pushing Sands up would have been better from the start, or maybe going with Keaton Parks, somebody who can, you know, get on the ball a little bit more and help them. But he's still figuring out that roster, and I'm not sure I'm ready to call it the end of the world. Although that's a fun thing to do too, if you're a New York City fan.
So it is the end of the world, but that's enough on NYCFC. You mentioned Jim Curtin. Let's talk about the Philadelphia Union. Billy Union, the second team to qualify for the knockout stage. They are 2-0 in this competition. Kalen, could anyone have seen this coming?
Well, I think I did pick them. I picked them actually to win the whole thing. And I'm feeling pretty good about that. Mainly because of their, you know, the results, top of the group. I predicted them to be top of the group A because I like the team, the blend of youth experience, all that good stuff. But I think mainly the fact that they were the only team with returning manager. And I think continuity, when you have a tournament where you just kind of flip the lights on, this is a team that can do that pretty easily. Because it's not just about the depth, it's about understanding the depth and how to use it. And they've already done a pretty good job of that. And we haven't seen their best. And the best teams get results and begin to grow through the tournament. And I think we're going to see more of that as we go. We haven't really seen Sergio Santos yet, what he can do. Shabilko is already scoring, playing well. Brennan Aronson, I think, has been really bright, but I think there's even more to come from him. And then you have Ali Bedoya, who, you know, in a tough match in that first game in the morning, gets a goal when you need him. And I think that that sort of blend works. Now, they've given up a little bit. They've given up some space in the back where they've given opportunities where they haven't been punished. That Inter-Miami especially was a bit wasteful there. And that's something that a good team, as you move on and past the group stage, will punish you for. And then Andre Blake has had a couple amazing moments, but then also a little bit shaky still coming off the line. So if they sort those little small things down, I think that they will be in a really good position and primed to go deep and maybe even make me look smart. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you just on a team with leadership. When you talk about Alejandro Bedoya and what he brings to the table, as far as being able to pull guys in the right direction, lift guys when they need it, motivate guys when they need it, and then deliver like on a 9 a.m. game. Those are big time moments and catalysts for teams to win. And so whether it's Shabilko sometimes not looking like he's polished in the final third, and then, you know, the second game looks like he's now getting a little bit of his sharpness back. Sergio Santos being able to stretch the field in certain times, making those good runs. And Brennan Aronson has made such a jump with his decision making, his progress, his runs, his awareness. I think he's really taking proper steps to fulfilling his potential. When you talk about guys who are looking like prime candidates to make an impact on the U.S. men's national team and getting an opportunity, that's Brennan Aronson. That's a young player who has taken the proper strides, who deserves a call-up and deserves a look. And I think Greg Berhalter watching him and saying, hey, this guy is really grasping what I want from my players. And
I've got a question
here. He elevated his game.
But do you think that, because we've seen the emergence of some young players abroad right now, and I know Philly wants to move some of these young players on at some point. It's a strange year, but do you feel like that time is sooner or later for Aronson to make that jump?
Sooner. After seeing the growth from last year to this year, I would say sooner, because he got that initial call up to the U.S. men's national team. It looks like he's really understanding how to have success in the areas of his game that needed work, because it was always, you knew what you were going to get from him. You know, I started training with him when he was 15, I want to say. And I saw, okay, he's got the confidence. He's got the engine. He can run all over the place. He can get from box to box. But is he clean with his decision-making, his first touch, his awareness? Is it just kind of running all over the place, or is there running with a purpose? Now I see he's running with a purpose, whether it's to create space for himself, whether it's to get into an area because a left back or right back of the opponent was vacated that space, and he knows I can get it there and then I can create something for someone else or for himself. And now he can shoot from distance. He can combine. He has a good first touch. I'm seeing all those little things that he's fine-tuned to make his game overall better, because he works on both sides of the ball. And now he can be a difference maker for the Philadelphia Union, where in the past you just look, oh, it's a young guy getting experience and not really, he's not going to really add, you know, that final touch. He's not going to create that, you know, final chance or get that final shot. Now you're seeing, okay, he is a difference maker. He can get us a goal, or he can create a goal. And his movement has been fantastic.
Big season for him. We hope a big tournament so far. So Philly, 2-0, they move into first place alongside Orlando, who they'll play in the final game. So that'll be fun to watch. And remember, four best third place teams get through. So 3 points for NYCFC or Miami in that last matchup could be the difference between going home and getting through. So no team in this competition is really going to be out of it until you've played all three of your games. So those coming up as well next week. Let's move into another game, 9 a.m. between the Chicago Fire and the Seattle Sounders. Unexpectedly between the Chicago Fire and the Seattle Sounders, unexpectedly at 9 a.m. Let's start with the Fire. Robert Berich taking advantage of Arriaga's mistake. Still had a ton of work to do. The Cruyff, the finish, it was pretty. Robert Berich, come on the show because we invited you, but We didn't hear back. So we'd love for you to come on another time after
He's not going to come on now. You called him out. I mean,
I didn't call him out. I don't know how it happened. I'm just saying.
Didn't hear back. You said you didn't hear back yet. Okay. So there's the door is still open.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, communication stuff sometimes, you know, there's a lot of different elements. So
he's got a lot going on.
Yes. Kevin Richardson says Chicago Fire better than you guys predicted? Question mark.
Well, I picked them to go through the group, actually. So how about that? No, I don't want to go. I don't want to dig too deep through my predictions.
Group A or
no? Once they switch groups.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I would have said. I'm not sure. I had a great reason why. I think they have. I liked some of the pieces that I saw earlier in the season. You mentioned Barrich. I think he's a guy that has been shown to be a finisher. I don't think he's really created a partnership yet with CJ Sapong. I don't know if they've quite figured out how those two pieces are going to work together. So that's something that they surely need to work on. I didn't see a ton. They looked more solid in the back and then they won on a set piece. The ironic part to me was I thought they won this match in the same way that Seattle usually does. They were just a little bit more alert. They were, there was just the long clearance where Barrich just, Arriaga kind of goes to sleep and misjudges the bounce. And then next thing you know, he's getting trucked by Barrich, shows the strength, but then also the composure afterwards when he goes against Yaimar to kind of cut it and put it on his left foot. So then the set piece, and that's a place where the Sounders have always been so good. So those two little small plays on a hot morning put Chicago on front. So uncharacteristic from Seattle, and now with that result just going the other way with San Jose getting a win. That kind of put them behind it. Now they could go through potentially maybe as the third seed still, but they're going into basically a must win now against Vancouver.
Cascadia Cup game that they have to win. As you mentioned it, Barrich, really good goal. That's what you're looking for your DP. We talked about strikers carrying teams in a competition like this. You also mentioned the mistake from Arriaga. He's been here for about a year. It wasn't the easiest way to come in, but this is a team in Seattle that's been built on quality play at the center back position in their time of success, from Chad Marshall to Roman Torres to Kim Ki-hee. Yaimar still getting adjusted, mm-hmm. but Charlie Arriaga has struggled. He struggled physically. He struggled in decision-making. He struggled in placement and reading balls off the ground. It does not seem to be perfect for Seattle coming into this one, a team as MLS Cup champions returning a ton of starters that I think a lot was expected of.
No, you're right. And Arriaga also had plenty of mistakes in the San Jose game and wasn't punished, nearly causing a penalty on Vaco late in the box. But overall, you have to be disappointed if you're a Sounders fan. This is the defending MLS Cup champions. You have Raul Ruiz Diaz, you have Nico Ladero, you have Gustav Svensson, Christian Roldan, Jordan Morris, Stefan Fry. I mean, you have a ton of talent and experience. There is no reason whatsoever that you should not be getting results and or playing the way you are, which was, of course, the climate is difficult. Every team has to face the heat and the humidity. But to defend and sit back and concede possession every match to teams that should not be able to keep the ball versus the talent that you have, there's no explanation. And you talk about young players getting an opportunity. Shandon Hopio comes into the game. Shandon Hopio only played 45 minutes in the first half. To be used as a scapegoat or an excuse to not win is unheard of. I mean, how could you use a player who's supposed to play in a system surrounded by experienced players is how you would envision the perfect opportunity to give a young player when you have players who are experienced and as talented and have a championship pedigree. When you talk about Raul Ruiz Diaz, Nico Ladero, Gustav Svensson, Christian Roldan, all these players around you to help you succeed. That's when you want to give a young player a chance with all the experienced players around him to help him up, to give him the correct instructions. If it doesn't go well, it doesn't go well, and you make a change. They did it 45 minutes. That is not an excuse when you lose the game. That is not an excuse because you have everybody else and they can either pick up the slack or you bring in somebody else like you did. Jordan Morris came in the game to still get a result. So when you lose against Chicago Fire, I don't want to hear I was using young players or his experience, because Handwell Abuana came in, who's 23 years old, and he got the goal. So that excuse goes completely out the window. I'm disappointed in the Seattle Sounders because I know the talent they have. They need to be a little bit more aggressive, and they need to go and establish dominance in possession in the attacking half, press teams, and get something out of it, because they have the players to do it. And it feels like a disservice, a little bit of a disservice to the players and the fans when they're just sitting back and defending and looking to only counter. When they can counter, because they have the players do it, but they also have the players to keep possession and make teams chase. Whether it's for 90 minutes, whether it's for 60 minutes, whether it's for 45 minutes, they have the players that they can change the way they play throughout the game. And I would like to see them be able to utilize their strengths a little bit more. Those talented players in the attacking half should be involved in the game more than they have.
Joe Paolo, of course, supposed to be a big part of that, isn't healthy for this one, but it's hard to complain about anything Seattle's done over the last 5 years with the success they had. At the same time, they keep talking about consistency and full seasons. And this year they came out, they lost in CCL to Olympia at home. Then they win a couple MLS games. And now we're here at the MLS's back tournament, and they have struggled so far. But as we said, no team is out until you've played your last game because of the way the third place is set up. Let's go to another big team. Last game to look back at here, who had an up and down experience, but an exciting game. LAFC 3-3 against Houston. Houston gets out to a 2-0 lead. Charlie, the floor is yours. You can gloat if you want, but it would seem a little bit early. But you were got about 12 GIFs texted to me throughout that game of you rubbing your hands, feeling good.
You know what? Everybody was waiting for it because I know I've got a ton of texts and tweets saying, oh, I know Charlie's dancing right now because he called it about Houston. And
scoreboard, baby, 90 minutes.
I could say it was so easy because look how they're set up. Tab has a good sense of how this team can be successful, playing to their strengths. And when you look at this Houston Dynamo team, it's pretty simple. Let's work on our lines and defending, similar to what Cincinnati did today against Atlanta. Let's defend first. First and foremost, let's not leak goals. Let's not be a team that's going to make all these mistakes in our own half and lose games because of it. So let's try and defend. And LAFC is the best team in the league. All right? They're missing Carlos Vela, but they're still the best team in the league. Play through Albert Elise. Play through Mauro Manotas. Play through Darwin Quintero. Three players who can hurt teams on their own. And when you talk about pace and strength and 1v1 ability, Albert Lees is up there with the best players in this league. He will expose you. And it'll take you on a defender six times, and maybe four or five that defender works out. Well, that one time he's getting by you and he's going to punish you. And I think we've seen him grow because in a lot of games throughout the years I've watched him play in MLS, he always gets to the end line. He always gets in front of the goal. And that final shot is not on target, or that final ball misses the mark. Now he's gotten a little bit better where he's finishing, or he's connecting that final pass to Mauro Manotas or Quintero, or getting that penalty. So Houston looks a lot better because now they're defending and they're getting chances and they're finishing. This is LAFC. They gave up three goals, but it's the LAFC. So huge props to Houston. Tab Ramos and his squad and his staff to finally putting out something where you can be like, you know what? That's a good performance from Houston. You see a difference from Houston last year to Houston this year. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Saturday, we'll see what they can do against Portland, a team that isn't really going to push possession. So how do they handle that? How do they maybe initiate a little bit more play? But Kalen, before we get there, LAFC, they go down early. Bob Bradley said in the post game, we don't want to give up goals, but we're going to play the way we're going to play. I think at this point we've learned football has a right and a wrong, and Bob's in the right and he's going to continue to push that. And they are entertaining. They are talented. No Vela. This is your first chance to see them. Is this a team that can still win this competition?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't see why they would change their style. It'd be one thing if they were playing one way and then they lost 3-1 to Houston, but like, they can always find their way back into a match based on their just sustained pressure and the amount of pieces that they have on their team. So Houston will feel good because they had, you know, basically the toughest match of their group and they'll now be able to carry on. Everyone's going to be looking towards this LAFC Galaxy match, right? That's the one right when the tournament was announced. That's what.
Is that a rivalry? I've never heard of it.
I think it's called El Trafico. Yeah. And look, I'm not going to be crazy. I think LAFC will win this match. They should win this match still, even without Carlos Vela. But I think. There is space to be had against this team. And if there is a path forward for the Galaxy, it will be from watching what Houston did. And they play this, you know, they move their fullbacks up the field. They play possession. They look to counter press. If you can break that first line of pressure, you can find space on the wings. And we saw what Elise was able to do when he gets isolated one-on-one. Or when you're able to think of who might be in that position. Well, that's Christian Pavone, who's pretty damn good in a one-on-one situation. And say you get that same opportunity where he's lined up against Jakovic or Segura and you draw them out into spaces where they're a little bit uncomfortable, then maybe you have something to work from. The Galaxy really lacked ideas. They lacked tempo in their passing against the low block. They looked really uninspired. But if they can figure out who they are and figure out the best way forward for them is moments in transition. Suddenly you've got Pavone running, you've got Leggett running, you've got Chicharito ghosting off the back post or making runs in the box. That starts to be a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more dangerous. But I still think LAFC is probably going to, they just have too many pieces and they're too good in possession to where you get Brian Rodriguez going and then you got Rossi and, Latif is just, I mean, for me, he's like a best 11 player in MLS this year. If you know, we had a full season, but he's just fantastic. So I still think LAFC is the top of the group. But after that, I think it's wide open. Galaxy, Houston, Portland, I think it's completely wide open for the group.
Kalen, you were former Houston Dynamo player.
Yes.
Talk to me about the squad. Because are you as high on them as I am? Because, you know, it's not like I think they're going to win MLS Cup. They were my dark horse for a reason because I think they've changed drastically under Tab. I think he figured out, I got to fix this defense first because I know how I can counter and hurt teams. If we can sit back and stick to the style, we're going to get some results.
Yeah, I am. And, you know, the one name that you mentioned, those front three, but Memo.
Yes, here it is. I was trying to get it in for you, Kalen, but I knew you'd get there.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's not, you know, this show is long. We'll always find our way to Memo. but yeah, I mean, I don't know how many programs I've been on talking about just how he was as an academy player when I was there. I know you talked about your experience with Brendan Aaronson, and mine kind of mirrors the same with Memo as far as being a young guy that was coming in, and you're like, wow, a lot of really good like technical ability, still had that quick trigger to get off a shot. But more than anything, I would say he was a very responsible player that would like, he was always learning from the older players and he's had some pretty good people around him, whether you look at Boniac Garcia or some of these guys that have been able to really help him out. But he's got something to him. Like he's not just, similarly to Aaronson, he's not just a guy that's content to be there or to facilitate. Like he's contributing with goals and making deep lying runs into the box, looking to get on the end of things. So I like this Houston team. When you look at the teams in general that do well in this tournament, this is a unique challenge. You know that heat and humidity is something that Shea Salinas everybody's talking about, and for good reason. And Houston, Orlando are two teams from these regions of the country that are used to training in this environment every day. And so I think, Chuck, of course I'm with you, man. Houston,
all right.
Let's go.
All right, respect.
All right. On that note, the Galaxy losing to the Portland Timbers. You guys talked about the Galaxy. We talked about the Timbers a bit. They will move into the next games. Portland will play Houston on Saturday and LA. You previewed that game, LA for us already, Kalen. You are a superstar. I appreciate that. Let's talk about a few other games coming up this weekend. Friday night is a triple header, simultaneous 8 p.m. games. You've got DC against New England and SKC against Colorado. Charlie, you're going to be on the radio call for that New England game.
That's
what
right.
do you expect to see for New England? Is this similar to Orlando? Let's get two wins. Let's like lock our spot out of the group here.
Nothing but 3 points. You're pressing, especially after you saw the way Toronto get at DC in that first 45 minutes. They're going to press. They're going to look to get Carlos Hill on the ball early and often and use Gustavo Bo to float around, pull people out of position, and then try and find those areas where they can go 2v1. Brendan Bai has made tremendous strides as a right back in this league. I said he kind of mirrors the way Reggie Cannon has grown as far as being a little bit more influential in the attacking half. They're both great defenders, but now...
He reminds me a lot of Gressel, coming out of college as more an attacking player.
Yeah,
having the physicality to hang at the pro level and then learn that position, but like wants to get forward.
Yes, and he can get forward because he has the athleticism to get back.
Yeah,
you don't have to ever worry about tracking back. And now he, under Bruce Arena, he understands the positioning. So he knows when to tuck in, when to fill in. If someone's out of place or out of whack, he has the leadership to pull people back in, but also he knows how to fill in. So he's taken tremendous growth, steps towards growth as a right back in this league. So he can get forward, hurt you. And then Bootner on the left side, he's got a great left foot. He can cross. He can play balls in. They can hurt you in different ways. So this New England team's going to press, and look to create, because now Carlos Hill is one of the best players in the league when it comes to creating turnovers in the final third, because he's always locked in. If the ball turns over, he's always the first to react. His reaction is probably up there is one of the best in the league. So this New England team, I expect them to come away with 3 points because DC just didn't show me enough.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're battlers, and that comes from Ben Olsen. Always don't give up, keep fighting. It's all about fight. And that works for a while. That can work to an extent, but it only lasts for so long, the fight. You need a little bit more. And I don't think Ola Kamara is involved enough. For Ola Kamara, getting one or two chances a game, that's not good enough for him. We saw him thrive at Columbus Crew because of the way they played. And Columbus Crew, I always told Greg Berhalter, why didn't you come and trade for me? Why? As a striker, you're getting 10, 12 chances there. Because they're always, the way they play, the press, the style, they are always creating chances for the striker. In this system with DC United, Ola Kamara is not getting that. He's getting maybe two, if he's lucky, two chances. That's not enough for him.
I'll be interested to see if they bring in Higuain from the start. I think that was the one thing where I was looking for a piece, and I know Flores is there, and credit to Toronto, they really imposed themselves in the first part of the game, but it just made me think how long, I know he's great and he's getting older and you want to maybe bring him off the bench, but how long can you wait to really maybe say, look, we need this guy. We need this guy to create something now. So that's what I'll be watching on the line.
So Junior Moreno, of course, suspended. The other thing is Segura started at that left attacking spot. Maybe Assad gets a start there. Segura is not really an attacking player. Didn't, to Charlie's point, help connect with Kamara and Flores and whatnot. It sounds like Zahibo might be back as well for the Revs, which is one of their big holes to fill. The other game at 8 p.m. on Friday night is SKC versus Colorado because of the way
everything
had to get moved around. Kalen, this was one you were looking forward to for two teams that there was a bunch of expectations and they both lost out the gate. So now facing off against each other, this almost becomes a must-win scenario.
Yeah, I think these were two teams that I was excited to watch coming in, and Colorado was just really disappointing, and I think even said it themselves. Kansas City, on the other hand, I thought was actually exceeded my expectations, but then had the red card to Melia that really shifted the game. But yeah, when you watch Bolito and the way he played, I was eager to watch him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew he was going to be dangerous in the box, and yeah, he had those couple goals early on where you're like, all right, he's gonna bank some goals. But I was thinking more of just this like traditional poacher and guy that's gonna be kind of lurking in the box. And then all of a sudden he's megging guys and body megging guys and mm-hmm. spinning and turning and facilitating. And I was just like, whoa, this is very different than even I was expecting.
Yes.
And so I'm looking at that team now and saying, if they can you know, if everyone is going to be different without Melia. And I think there's still some questions maybe with the back line and giving up a little bit. But still, I was like, this, I think the Sporting Kansas City team is a brand new team, and we haven't seen the best of them. So same with Colorado. So I'm like, all right, let's wipe the record clean a little bit and see these two teams really go after it.
I'm with you.
Charlie's a police.
You couldn't have said it better.
A lot of exciting players. There's been some great play so far, some fun, exciting goals. Miami had a great goal. Jesus Medina hit a screamer. A lot of wild things that have gone on. The late game on Friday night is RSL versus Minnesota to close out that group alongside SKC Colorado. Saturday and Sunday, quite simple and easy. You've got groups with four teams. There are two games each. The whole group plays. So Saturday, you've got the Portland-Houston and then El Trafico at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. That one on ESPN, so that's your Saturday night right there. And then Sunday evening, you've got Chicago versus San Jose and that must-win game for Seattle facing off against Cascadia rival Vancouver at 10:30 p.m. And then you've got NYCFC against Miami, 9 a.m. Monday morning to start your week and followed up with ETR. Life is good. MLS is back. Thank you, Kalen. Thank you, Charlie. Shout out to Leo Salinas for coming on here after that great goal, to the burrito gods and everyone else out there. Thank you for following along. Have a great weekend.